You're listening to Chaos on the Set, a chaotic TV and film review podcast, and it is time for the second most important podcast of the year, second to only our Oscar predictions. We are here to break down the 2024 Oscar nominations for you. We've assembled our usual Academy crew. I'm Shruti.
I'm Mike.
And of course, we have my favorite person in the whole world to talk to about the Oscars, Jesse, joining us again. Jesse, thank you for coming back.
Thank you so much for inviting me, even after I predicted Austin Butler would win Best Actor last year.
You know, still in shape. He had it going for him. You never know how things are going to go. And then we ended up getting a full A24 sweep on the acting category. So that was fun for last year. But let's get into this year. The Oscar nominations were announced Tuesday of this week. We are coming to you to break them all down. I believe the biggest conversation coming out of the Oscar nomination morning is the snubs for Greta Gerwig in directing and Margot Robbie in lead actress. How did y'all feel about this? Did it feel like a snub to you, or are you happy with who was nominated?
I'll defer to Jesse.
Mike is nervous because he came across as such a jerk in the last Barbie pod.
Yeah, a little bit.
For directing, I had expected Greta to be there. After she missed out on the BAFTA, I was beginning to worry that maybe her chances were sort of dwindling. And it's hard. I kind of want to cop out and say both. I think it's a snub. And also, it's hard for me to look at this list of directing nominees and say one of them shouldn't be there in exchange for Greta. You know, I had a friend be like, what, Scorsese couldn't bow out? And like, is that fair? Like, he directed the crap out.
I don't think Scorsese had to bow out. I personally would take Scorsese out for Greta. You can crucify me for it, but I wasn't the biggest fan of Killers of the Flower Moon, and I did love Barbie.
I mean, it wouldn't have been the worst thing, but it's hard to look at this list of directors and take a ton of qualms about it. Do I wish the Academy would nominate more than one woman? Yes. But it's tough with such good pictures nominations and then only five directors to move things around. I thought Margot would be there, but I also can't look at that list either. If I would sub Margot in for anybody, it would have been Carey Mulligan.
Really? Sorry. Even over Annette, I would sub Margot for Annette Bening.
When you say you would sub them, are you saying more so from a personal preference or from, I guess, from a prediction of what you thought was going to happen?
I'm speaking personally. I don't know about Jesse. Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be a prediction. Annette Bening is hugely loved in the industry. I think this is like her fifth nomination. NIAID came out during the strike, so she really didn't get to do any campaigning, which means she didn't get to talk about all the strenuous swim training that she probably had to do. Like, I jokingly referred to it as her Revenant, which it basically is. Like, the amount of training that she didn't get to do the Bradley Cooper, like, I trained for 6 months to, you know, and everybody loves her. I thought she had more to do. It's a biopic, a little bit more focused on her. So that's kind of why I would say that.
And can I just put it out there, as someone who has watched NIAID, I don't think it's like as preposterous as maybe some people thought it was in terms of, you know, the nominations. And, you know, was it a great film? No, it was not. But it was entirely carried by Annette Bening and Jodie Foster. And it was a serviceable biopic at the end of the day. So honestly, I wasn't surprised, and I don't really have any qualms with that nomination either. To answer your question, Shruti, I'm definitely more surprised by Greta Gerwig being snubbed, even though, for the record, I did predict it months and months ago.
So we did, yes, as Mike is referring to, we had a long-term bet when we covered Barbie, actually back in September, so not in July. It was still a couple months after Barbie came out when these bets were taken. It was around Barbie's IMAX release. What will Barbie win or slash not get nominated for at the Oscars? I'm going to play this quick clip of our discussion on director. Will Barbie get nominated for Best Director?
Yes.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know.
She doesn't.
I think
the Academy's going to get so much fucking shit because they did nominate for her Little Women, and that was so bad.
Barbie, sorry, Mike has bet no. Jesse has bet yes.
if you look at Gold Derby right now, she is not a front runner on most lists. Most lists have Nolan for Oppenheimer, Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, Jonathan Glazer for Zone of Interest, and Justine Theroux for Anatomy of a Fall.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the exact nominations of directors. Gold Derby had it right in September, all five. Now, I think this just teaches me to take Gold Derby more seriously, honestly.
I mean, that's wild that they predicted it that accurately that long ago.
In September.
I feel like that was really before specifically Anatomy of a Fall and The Zone of Interest picked up steam. And obviously Poor Things, you know, was a recent release, but I think that was one that everybody sort of had on their board for a long time as probably a film to watch this year and something that would be popular. But you know me, when it comes to Oscar stuff, I love to look at betting odds and mathematical predictions based off of past success and things of that nature. And something that I was referencing in the past week leading up to these nominations was an article by The Hollywood Reporter just using a mathematical model to predict. In their top five were Christopher Nolan, Yorgos, Scorsese, Greta Gerwig, and Alexander Payne for The Holdovers. You know, in The Zone of Interest being then the sixth spot outside looking in. So I was surprised by Greta Gerwig, but also a little by Alexander Payne.
Wait,
not
Mike,
getting
when,
the nom.
What, the list that you looked at, when was that published?
January 19th.
Oh, okay, so Friday.
Very, very recently.
My
but
sister's
not
birthday. Happy birthday, Pyle.
Happy birthday. but not only that, I guess if I thought Greta Gerwig wasn't going to get a nomination, I would have maybe put it on Celine Song or Bradley Cooper being nominated before Justine Triet.
So I, one of the things,
you know, Hollywood eats that shit up. I don't think he deserved it, but
we could feel it going into it that he was not getting this directing.
Yeah. One of the things
I didn't think Justine Triet was getting it either, to be honest.
I say it the past like few years, but really the Academy has gotten so much international. And mm-hmm. yeah, in the last few years, it's been like one slot for our, you know, token international director. But I think
now it's
really
two international, but one woman.
Anatomy of a Fall has been like huge in Europe, like huge, mm-hmm. like everywhere.
Also shocking that the French did not choose it there for their foreign film submission.
Very funny. There's very little French actually spoken in the movie, which is funny. I have not seen The Zone of Interest yet. It's the only one I haven't seen because A24 is trying to personally keep it away from me and like yeah. not in a theater by me.
I feel your pain living in Syracuse, New York. We don't get yeah. anything.
I live in Chicago. But anyway.
Just
but
for
this
context,
is
I had to go see Zone of Interest at 10 o'clock in the morning when I was in New York City in order to see it. And it's not a 10 o'clock in the morning movie. So it's tough to see yeah. this movie.
Which is very frustrating. But I think this is a testament to just how international the voting bodies have become and why that might not show up in statistics that take into account, you know, many, many years. Also, Justine Triet is like awesome. And she gave some really great speeches at the Golden Globes where she like mm-hmm. collected a whole bunch of trophies.
Ryan yeah. Gosling did release a statement after the Margot and Greta Gerwig snubs. He started off by saying thank you, that he's honored, etc. And then said, but there's no Ken without Barbie and there's no Barbie movie without Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie, the two people most responsible for this history-making, globally centered film. No recognition would be possible for anyone on the film without their talent, grit, and genius. To say I'm disappointed by that they're not nominated in their respective categories would be an understatement. Against all odds, with nothing but a couple of soulless, scantily clad, and thankfully crotchless dolls, they made us laugh, they broke our hearts, they pushed the culture, and they made history. Their work should have been recognized along with the other deserving nominees. Having said that, I'm so happy for America Ferrera and the other incredible artists who contributed their talents into making this such a groundbreaking film. I think this is a great statement. You know, he is thankful, but also you know, putting it out there that he's upset. I will say that the Barbie Greta directing thing feels a lot to me like the Black Panther Ryan Coogler snub, in the sense that these are both very commercial blockbuster movies that had an incredible craft that would not be possible without their director, that they made these worlds that are so immersive and really true to the vision of the director by having the best production design and sound and score and costume. And Black Panther got nominated for picture, sound editing, sound mixing, production design, costume, score, and song. Barbie got nominated for picture, supporting actress, screenplay, song twice, costume design, and production design. And it's the kind of thing like when Ruth Carter was accepting for Black Panther, when all of these artistic below the line categories were accepting their speeches for Black Panther, everyone was like, wow, wild that the director who brought all of these people together wasn't even nominated. And I feel like we're going to see the same narrative for Barbie this year, except it might lose production design to Poor Things.
Well, for the record, not to take away from that point, because I think it's a good one, but they are nominated. Like, Margot is a producer of Barbie, yes. So she is nominated. Mm-hmm. And then Greta is a screenwriter, and she was nominated. So they do have Oscar nominations for this movie, which I think is lost a little bit in the narrative, but it doesn't take away from your very, very valid point.
Yeah.
And Ryan Coogler was a producer on Black Panther, so he was also nominated for that.
But I mean, sort of jumping off of that point, in nothing against Margot Robbie, I thought she did a fantastic job in the film, but I do think, like, of the two, Greta Gerwig is the bigger snub, if you will, because I mean, she really made that film into the spectacle and the cultural event that it was. And it, you know, I think even the message of that film, right, is it's so much more like than just Margot Robbie. Like, it was, the film felt so large in scale and such a group effort. I think that goes back to the director. And that's why it was also interesting, I think, to see America Ferrera get the nomination. I was very surprised by that. That was like completely out of left field.
America Ferrera, her speech did not work for me when I watched Barbie, in the sense that it wasn't that groundbreaking. You know what I mean? But I do think that it did work for a lot of people who hadn't had those ideas of what it is like to be a woman in this country introduced to them before. Like, Barbie for me was a little bit feminism 101, but for other people, I think it was an enlightening experience, and that enlightenment does rest all on America Ferrera's shoulders and that speech. So I'll give her that, even though it didn't work for me. I will support her for that. If I had my pick, I would take Penelope Cruz in a Ferrari and shift her into that spot, literally just for the scene where she visits her son's grave and her face, like, Oscar, 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 just for that one scene in Ferrari.
Yeah.
America Ferrera also gave a really great speech at the Critics' Choice Awards, which I think are a silly award show. But
she didn't win, right? It was like an honorary award?
It was like for Barbie, right? Or like she accepted on behalf of it. But it was a very good speech.
You think that speech got her the nom?
I think it helped because she was the face of that movie for that moment, and it was right in the middle of Oscar voting, which is not a very long period of time. And the Critics' Choice Awards, I think, are a silly award show, but a lot of stars showed up, and it was on televised, so I can't imagine it hurt.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, and I don't think this is the reason why she didn't get nominated, right? But, like, looking at the Best Actress category, I feel like every single one of these nominees, generally speaking, were in films with relatively smaller casts, or they had more work to do, right, to carry the film, particularly you know, the front runners like Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone, but even like Annette Bening, right? That film is her. Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall. That film is her. Her and the dog and the little kid. They were great. But Barbie really, to me, felt like this great ensemble piece. And I guess so for that reason is why I wasn't too surprised that Margot Robbie didn't get nominated. I texted my friend the other day. I said, I'm not convinced she's going to get nominated. I thought there was a lot of competition with Sandra Hüller and Annette Bening, but I thought even Greta Lee could sneak in there for Past Lives. So again, great performance. I wish they could all get in, but
I know this isn't the prediction.
That's why the Oscars are so great.
I know this isn't the prediction episode, but if you'll forgive me, I mean, Greta Gerwig, even if she was nominated, wasn't going to likely win Best Director, right? It's like looking like Nolan. But do you think this could be like an Argo situation where Ben Affleck wasn't nominated for director and everyone was all huffy about it, and then Argo won Best Picture as like a consolation prize?
I don't think a blockbuster movie can win Best Picture. If Top Gun Maverick saved movies and couldn't win Best Picture, I don't think Barbie can win Best Picture. I'm thinking from a blockbuster perspective, not from like a, you know, what it was for women.
Do you count Oppenheimer as a blockbuster?
Damn, I didn't even think about that. Well, I think Oppenheimer is winning Best Picture, so I guess everything I just said is false.
It's not a conventional one, I guess.
Yeah, but it is.
But I think it has. Yeah, it has to be considering just the cultural event that was built around it.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to burst your bubble. It's more of a thought exercise. There's a lot of time between now and the actual Oscars.
Love to agonize over this. To further contrast my point and or go against my point. This is the second straight year that a number one movie at the box office has been nominated for Best Picture. Last year was Top Gun Maverick. This year is Barbie. The last time this happened in consecutive years was in 1976 and 1977 with Rocky and Star Wars. So while blockbusters haven't been favored in a while, obviously I'm wrong. Anyway, James Cameron also got nominated for directing Avatar, and Todd Phillips got nominated for directing Joker. So further proof that people can get nominated for directing blockbusters. So, oh, another fun fact is that Greta Gerwig has now become the first director ever, man or woman, to have their first three solo directorial efforts be nominated for Best Picture: Lady Bird, Little Women, and Barbie, all nominated for Best Picture. Man, wow. I love just the man or woman's, like, because we're hearing so many stats of like this is the first year a man and a woman are both openly gay man and woman are both nominated for playing openly gay characters, and whenever it's like very specific to a demographic, it's just sad. But the fact that this is anything, man or woman, it's just, this stat makes me very happy.
It feels even more damning that she hasn't been nominated.
True. This kind of, Jesse, goes towards your point of release strategy for this year's Oscars. I got this from Pete Hammond's analysis on the Oscar nominations. Pete Hammond writes for Deadline. He said, if there's anything truly surprising about the 2023 Oscar nominees, it might be that six of the 10 Best Picture hopefuls already had been screened and reviewed by critics before June, including Past Lives in Sundance in January and Anatomy of a Fall, The Zone of Interest, and Killers of the Flower Moon, all debuting at Cannes. Then, of course, there's the infamous Barbenheimer, summer duo of Barbie and Oppenheimer. So in terms of late release for Oscar, it looks like that's not the strategy anymore.
I don't know what some of these studios are thinking, to be quite honest. And maybe that's just me being bitter again, because I haven't been able to see some stuff. And it's been taking forever to like get out here. And I live in the third biggest city in the country. But yeah, I have a similar stat that there's no Best Picture winner or Best Picture nominee this year from a fourth quarter release that didn't also have a festival run like previously.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because we've had a lot of friends really love like Iron Claw and get like very upset that it was included. Also, Ava DuVernay's Origin, you know, had kind of like an end push. But these movies came out not, I think actually Origin did come out during festival season, but like they had a very late kind of push. And I think part of it is like Neon and A24 aren't that large. They don't really have a huge awards run. You know, like Neon was going to push Anatomy of a Fall. A24 had a lot of contenders. So they can't really be everywhere at once. I think A24 has two Best Picture nominees, Past Lives and The Zone of Interest. So, you know, stuff is going to just kind of fall through the cracks. Which is sad. I did like Iron Claw.
Yeah. Well, just to, you know, add on to that, Shruti and I were discussing the other day, like, does this feel like a down year or a weird year for the Oscars in terms of buzz and excitement? Like, I feel like there was no buildup to any of this. I was completely caught off guard even when award season was starting. Like, I found out the Golden Globes were airing that same day.
Okay, I will not co-sign this. I knew that.
I know you're not going to co-sign that. And then usually I'm better than this.
That's a strike thing, probably, right? Because I mean, overall, I think the movies this year have been some of the best. Like there in this lineup, there isn't one movie where I was like, oh no, like I have to go see that. Like everything I was pretty much excited for.
And so, well, I guess I feel like maybe the reason why there's a a lack of buzz is because, like you said, a lot of these films that are nominated came out so long ago. Like, you know, just Past Lives and Oppenheimer and Barbie and Killers of the Flower Moon, they have not been at the top of my mind for many Killers months now.
I would say Killers came out the same time as Star is Born came out in that early fall. Mm-hmm. Barbie, not really, didn't come out thinking it was going to get Oscars. Oppenheimer, yeah. Nolan always likes the summer release. It's Past Lives that I really want to dissect, because I remember when the strike hit, most of the award season podcasts I follow were like, ooh, Past Lives can still campaign because they have a SAG interim agreement. Like, maybe they'll, you know, and my cynicism was like, Past Lives is not getting nominated for everything. And I'm so thrilled to be wrong, but I'm curious if y'all think, had there not been a strike, would Past Lives still have gotten into the Best Picture race?
Think so. It feels like A24 kind of does know what to do with those early, like, Everything Everywhere All at Once is a lot buzzier, but so I do think they do know what to do to, like, keep that hope alive or everything. But I do think that's a really interesting, like, point, and it's one I hadn't thought of, because I did kind of think for a while that this year would have, like, a little bit of an asterisk next to it because no one got to really campaign. But everyone's really been bidding their whole campaign in the last, like, month or so. So even if it has felt a little bit more condensed as it's gone on, I was like, oh yeah, the strike happened.
Yeah. And, you know, the naive part of me chooses to believe that a majority of the best films will get nominated. Obviously, that's not always the case. Obviously, sometimes real stinkers get nominated for Best Picture. But wholeheartedly agree, Jesse, with what you said about, you know, not being disappointed in the 10 nominees that we have this year. So I do understand that thought experiment, but also I would just hope that Past Lives, in my opinion, being one of the best films of the year, would still be nominated nonetheless.
Yeah, it's just so small, and, you know, we love award season and the gamification of it all, but at the end of the day, it is very frustrating how much money is necessary to actually get any kind of recognition. I was reading that it costs $8,000 for an indie movie to get screened on the Academy's digital screening site. Studios pay $20,000. So at least they give indies a tighter break. But I'll tell you, I worked at a production company that just, we're not buying for Oscars, but there's no way we would have $8,000 in our budget to just put ourselves on the site, let alone a whole Oscar campaign. And then you look at Roma, where they literally spent more money on Roma's Oscar campaign than making Roma. And you're like, what is the point of all of that money when Roma?
And then they lost. Yeah. Huge upset loss.
Well, okay, well, which brings us to the next long-term bet that we have to make. In 2022, when The Power of the Dog was the front runner, I bet Mike and Jesse, when will Netflix win Best Picture? They both bet 2022, and I was like, ha, 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 I'm right. I bet 2024, I'm not going to win this year. So now we have to rebet. Long-term bet. What? Let's throw a year out there.
I mean,
it's not going to be next year unless they buy Dune 2.
I want to say never, just because I hope they never fucking win, because I'm sick of their bullshit. I really am. I mean, they are the worst of the worst when it comes to putting these films in theaters. And I understand their strategy is different than others because they're not trying to make money in theaters. They're trying to make money streaming. But I'm so sick of it. And I'll give you an example. Maestro, which I don't think was a very good film, and I will not watch it again. But I was interested enough in seeing it and excited enough to see it that had it been in theaters in a wider release, I would have gone. I get on the Regal app today. I see it in the coming attractions, because now that it's nominated, you know, for Best Picture, they're all getting a release. And I understand it's not a Maestro specific thing. It's across the board. All the Best Picture nominees will be back in theaters, but I ain't going to go fucking see it because I already saw it at home on Netflix and it wasn't very good. Some of the other Best Picture nominees that are better, sure, I'll go back to the theaters and rewatch them. But my point being, Netflix, you missed your opportunity to get my ass in a seat to see your film in a theater. and I will never forgive you for that. And they do it every year. I had to drive an hour and a half so I could see The Irishman. I had to drive an hour so I could see Pinocchio. Like, this is a recurring theme with Netflix and their bullshit.
I will say, with May December in particular, I was lucky enough to see that at a festival, the Chicago International Film Festival. And
that was another one. Wish I saw it.
I do think seeing that in theaters is a different experience, because I came out of it being like, that was a comedy.
Yes.
I think a lot of people,
my God,
that like saw it at home, like
I never
understood.
I read so many reviews, so many, and I'm like, what are these people laughing at? I was like, what
oh,
do they
Mike,
see in this film?
I saw it in theaters twice in LA. Oh boy,
we
were people
screaming
laughing.
Screaming laughing. Like, I was like, this is camp. Like, I thought it was hysterical.
See, I saw May December and I was like horrified. And I thought it was great. But
I mean,
I was,
as
like,
you should
horrified.
Be.
Yeah,
yeah, no,
sure.
It is horrifying, but it's like a very, very dark comedy. But my theater was like, so I think, and I'm not really a proponent of like, you have to see things in theaters, just because it's like, you know, it's hard for some people to get out and see it, right? Zone of interest. And, but May December in particular, I think was really hurt by that.
Mm.
And not because people couldn't sit through it, but because of the tone, I think, comes off differently.
Let me ask you, was the line where Natalie Portman says to Charles Melton, and I'm paraphrasing, but she says something like, because that's what adults do.
Yeah.
Did that sequence.
This is what adults do. What is this all about? This is just what adults do. This is after they sleep together.
Yeah.
I don't think we laughed at that.
No, that
was
going to
say, because I was going to say my heart sank with that one.
No, that
was
like very profound. It was
I kind of don't get it. Can you explain it to me?
What do you mean?
That line?
What is this? When she says this is what adults do, what is the this? Is it the casual sex of it all? Is it like, what is she talking about?
Yeah, I think just
be messy.
Got it.
Yeah, like all of that in general, because like, if you know, if you preface it with, you know, a few minutes earlier when they're both sitting in the bed and he asks her, have you ever done this before? And she just like laughs it off.
Yeah.
You know, I think because obviously clearly due to his trauma and how fucked up the situation is, his growth, you know, and his maturity, I think in that realm is a bit stunted. So yeah,
thanks for explaining it to me.
It was more the music cues and when she opens the fridge and goes, we don't have enough hot dogs or something. My theater wouldn't stop laughing.
That was me. Obviously in LA, our theater loved the joke. Music supervisor, I could do this job.
Yeah, or even when she's like looking at the little boys, and she's like, I don't think they're like hot enough. You know?
And then like her director's like, I think you need to come home.
Yeah, it's very disturbing, but it's funnier in a theater. Mm-hmm. But it is one of those kind of bummers, because I thought that was just such a wonderful movie, and I know a lot of people that maybe saw it at home didn't get that feeling, and I wonder if performances like Melton. He was such a critic's darling.
Heart,
he was like
snub,
a front runner,
snub of the century,
and so him not even getting nominated now, I mean, it was starting to like trickle down, as it seemed kind of obvious that people didn't quite get the movie as much, but that was kind of another glaring snub.
I thought he had one of the standout performances of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take him over RDJ?
No.
In terms of the win, no, but
a personal favorite,
very should have well been nominated.
It's tough because I really love Sterling K. Brown. I don't know if that was his best performance.
Jesse, I will not take any Sterling K.
I know,
Brown.
I'm sorry, I like him so much and he's so handsome.
I think he is a magnet to any scene, like anything he's in. It's like, when Sterling K. Brown is not on screen, I am asking, where is Sterling K. Brown?
Looking at this list, it's very tough. I mean, I actually thought Dafoe and Ruffalo would get in for like a bit.
I was so nervous about Dafoe because Ruffalo is my personal fave. So
of the five.
Yeah, if I had to say who I would want to win going into this, it would be Ruffalo for for things. That's not going to happen. It would be Rachel McAdams for Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Sure. That's not going to happen. It would be Andrew Scott for fucking All of Us Strangers. That's All not going to happen.
Yeah. Haven't seen it yet. No spoilers. Haven't seen it because so I live in Syracuse.
Prepare to be sad.
Yeah. Basically, everything I want is not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I mean, I got Mark Ruffalo in there, and that's what I can celebrate.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I've drank the RDJ Kool-Aid. I'm sorry. I'm 100% all in. I find him just like exceedingly charming. Everyone loves him. There's like a video of him like making Christopher Nolan like belly laugh. I don't think I've ever seen you laugh before. So yeah,
I have no
issue
with
him.
I have no issue with RDJ winning. I can't comment on Sterling K. Brown because, again, not playing in theaters by me. I will see it one day, but it is not in Syracuse yet. I think Robert De Niro deserves to be there. I would put Charles Melton in ahead of Ryan Gosling and Mark Ruffalo. Sue me. And I like both of them. I thought they gave good performances. Mark Ruffalo, I discount just because I thought it was detestable. Horrible.
Oh my God. Did you like The Holdovers? Because then we're going to have to fight.
I loved The Holdovers. We're going to have to fight.
Ryan Gosling. More about why you didn't like Poor Things? Because I genuinely, you are the first person I've met that didn't like Poor Things.
My parents like Poor Things.
Yeah, I guess so. And I should preface it: Yorgos really just does not land with me, not very well.
I believe Mike's Killing of a Sacred Deer review was, "What the fuck was that?"
I hated that movie too.
And there was not a good "What the fuck was that?" either. I think I gave Killing of the Sacred Deer 2.5 stars. I'm like mid on The Lobster. And yeah, Poor Things, I honestly, I thought was abhorrent. I thought the acting.
Was it the sex?
Yes, I thought it was abhorrent.
Oh, man.
Let me explain why. Because I'm not opposed to, you know, I do not have an issue with it in film, as has been sort of a recent discourse in the last, I want to say, 5 years of film. People have really been hyper focused on like too much sex in film, whatever. But I thought the film was very well made. The acting was good. The design, it was great. And I thought it was
the plot that bothered you.
The plot, particularly the first half. The film was redeemed a little bit for me in the second half, and particularly the ending. To see her grow. But I will say the first half of the film, it was just very disturbing to me how they were sexualizing this woman who had the brain capacity of a child, right? Because it's either one of two things is essentially happening in this circumstance: is either in a weird backwards way they are sexualizing a child, or they are sexualizing somebody with a mental disability, essentially. And I just thought the film handled it very poorly. I don't think the film really portrayed it in a way where it was like, this is wrong. This should be disturbing. Like I had an issue with the perhaps lighter portrayal of it, particularly a lot of the self-discovery bit of it. But yeah, I could not sit there and enjoy it. And I also did just not find it very funny at all. I was like, oh, she talks weird. She doesn't know what she's saying. Hilarious. Yeah, it was not for
you
me.
You didn't think it was funny that she called Willem Dafoe's character God? I thought that was hilarious.
That was funny, yeah.
I will say, I didn't love Poor Things the way people loved Poor Things, but I don't know, those things didn't bother me as much just because I felt like it was baked into the print. I can't explain why it didn't bother me, really.
I had read the book before, so maybe that's kind of also why. Mm-hmm. And it's told sort of interesting, like, it's worth reading. It's told sort of like through a journal, like a medical journal. So I read more as like empowering to me. I think your reading is still valid. But it felt kind of like a feast for the eyes, just like mm-hmm. in terms of like a cinematic movie going experience.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And it is a film very much worth seeing in a theater for that reason. And I did read a lot of reviews after the fact about it being this story of empowerment. And again, I get that piece particularly in the second half. But the word I would almost use with the first half is like, it felt like grooming. And I was like, I don't know, is it empowering to like be groomed into something and then come out of that? I mean, I guess in a sense, but it also felt like she was groomed into this path that led her into empowerment. I don't know, it was just very, like, I like weird, fucked up films, so this was not one for me. Couldn't do it.
If you disagree with Mike, send us an email.
It's fine. I will die on this hill.
This is where we get the audience engagement we have been craving. Tweet us at Chaos in the Set, Instagram at Chaos in the Set. Let us know why you disagree.
I've already gotten a ton of hate for this opinion, and I will take plenty more. Plenty. I went through Letterboxd and I sorted by lowest reviews, and I just liked all of them. All of them, half stars, like.
Mike, you're such a hater. Wait, can
Even
I?
I didn't do that with the holdovers.
When I hate with passion.
Wait, but speaking of being a hater, I need to read my favorite review of Maestro on Letterboxd. It is by somebody I follow whose Letterboxd name is Haley Steinfeld. It is my friend's brother who just decided that it would be funny to make his Letterboxd name Haley Steinfeld. I agree that it is funny. He gave Maestro half a star. The first paragraph reads, "If it took me 2 years of preparation to do something and this was the result, I would personally not go around bragging about it because that shit is embarrassing. Like, I can't. Literally. I'm sorry. Ha 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 ha," in all caps.
But he is so right. Like, people were acting like, "Oh, it took Bradley Cooper 6 years to learn how to direct this one piece." And I'm like, that's not the Oscar bait you think it is. That's pathetic. And my friend's going to listen to this. I don't know if he'll actually listen, but if he heard me say that, he would be livid. So, Jake, please do not listen to this episode.
No, Jake, listen and tweet us at Chaos on the Set. God.
It didn't really tell us anything about Leonard Bernstein other than that he was queer, I guess.
Anything about music either. I was like, I want this to be about music.
It told
music.
You that if music doesn't sing in you, then nothing sings. Oh, no, Summer doesn't. Damn, I can't even get the line.
I mean, look, here's the thing. I think it's very difficult and sometimes even unfair to criticize biopics based on their content, because when you're talking about the entirety of somebody's life, things are going to end up on the cutting room floor, right? And so I think, you know, filmmakers are well within their right to focus on these specific angles of somebody's life. The downside of that is particular things are only going to interest particular people. So it's like, me as somebody who likes classical music, I wanted much more of that. I could give a shit about the difficulties of his marriage. And quite frankly, I don't think they leaned enough into him being gay. Like, that was just like this weird fucking dance around bit. And I had the same criticism of Ferrari. As a huge Ferrari and racing fan, show me how he built this empire and how he wanted to win, not how he had this weird bastard child and Penelope Cruz was on his case shooting a gun at him. Like, I don't give a shit.
Louis Vertel has a tweet that says, "What exactly is the conflict in Master and Maestro? He's a musical genius, but he got into an argument once."
Yes. Who left Snoopy in the vestibule?
Yeah.
That was the pinnacle of that film, by the way.
He got into an argument once. That's great. Okay, wait, I must push y'all. I need a year for the 2020, the Netflix bet.
Well, so, now I need to look at like potential releases.
I mean, who knows? Netflix's future strategy, I think, is rotating drastically. Yeah. Scott Stuber, who was very involved in the Netflix feature business, just left this past week. It was a pretty big shock to the industry. Stuber was way more in the blockbuster side of the Netflix film. He brought in blockbusters, courting filmmakers such as Zack Snyder, the Russo brothers, and Michael Bay. So I'm not sure how much this has an actual effect on the Oscar viability of Netflix. That said, I don't think Netflix is gonna, I think they have to stop trying. It's gonna happen like Apple and Coda. Like, it's just gonna happen by accident, really, I think.
Yeah.
They buy good stuff.
2027, I'm just gonna throw out a random year. No reason.
I'll say 2028.
Well, now I gotta say like 2026. I don't believe it. Will there even be a Netflix set?
2026 is 2 years.
You could say 29.
I feel like 29 is the safer bet than 26.
Fine. Honestly, it's 2029.
It is
we're all
scary.
Dead by then.
I was gonna say it's scary to think of us getting to the year 2030. Holy
I
shit.
Know. Oh, I asked my friend, would Past Lives would still be nominated? My friend Addison is my, like, Oscar. He's my Oscar Jesse. He said, would Past Lives still be nominated without the strike? And he said, I think the better question is there a movie that would have been nominated but for the strike? So he, like, turned it around on me.
Wait, sorry. Explain the question.
Like, it did Past Lives get in because they got to, they didn't have to, they weren't on strike or they were exempt. Yeah. So, but what did they... Is there a movie that would have gone in except for the strike? So did
oh,
it, like
Dune Part 2?
Yeah, Dune Part 2.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, something that
so Past Lives got took a Dune Part 2 spot. Past Lives and Dune Part 2, basically the same movie.
Yeah, basically exactly the same.
So I'm still the earliest. Oh, God. So does that mean if it's 2026, I win? Like if it's before?
Yeah.
Price is Right?
I feel like if it's 2026, if anything, I should just lose because Jesse was about to take it and I told her not to.
Okay, no, we have a recording of it.
And we can talk about how Martin Scorsese just beat. So Martin Scorsese just got his 10th nomination for Best Director, breaking a tie with Steven Spielberg for second place. The most nominated director is William Wyler with 12. Another long-term bet, will anyone ever break Wyler's record? I guess it would have to be Spielberg or Scorsese. Or somebody that's a baby.
Greta Gerwig in 40 years.
Or someone that's a baby. I want just Spielberg. What does Spielberg have like?
On the horizon?
Yeah. He has 39 sources. Upcoming projects on IMDb.
39?
But I'm sure
he's got to be a producer
of
them.
Oh, yeah. Right. A lot of the, like, The Adventures of Tintin. Untitled John Williams documentary.
Ooh.
I would watch that. Some of these make Who Framed Roger Rabbit 2. Oh, hopefully they make that. Okay, there's too much on here to guess. Yeah, there's like some stuff on here though that like Broadway plays that I recognize. Yeah, I mean, Untitled George Gershwin Project. I mean, the man is gonna win like three more Oscars or be nominated.
Yeah, I would say it'd be Spielberg too.
Yeah, probably no one will ever break it.
You don't think anyone will break 12? I think Spielberg will break 12.
What's he at now?
10.
Specifically for Best Director?
Yes. It has to be a director nomination.
Mm.
Scorsese just tied it with Killers. So I feel like Spielberg has to at least get to 11 to beat Scorsese.
I'm going to go no.
Last big question is Lily Gladstone a lock on this? Or do we think Emma Stone is a fear for her? I see Lily Gladstone as the Michelle Yeoh of this season and Emma Stone as the Kate Blanchett of the season, where it fully depends on how much Kate and Emma actually campaign and want it, you know, otherwise it's mm-hmm. Lily/Michelle's to take.
It's tough though, because Sandra Hüller too could come out of nowhere.
Saucy.
There's so many international. Yeah, there's so many international voters. I mean, I think mainly it's a two-person race, mm-hmm. and Lily's just so graceful campaigning, and her speeches are all great. I mean, whoever wins SAG, I guess, is like a cop-out answer.
I was gonna say I before you asked that question, I was like shocked when you said, "Does Lily have it locked up?" Like, I think it's truly 50-50. Like,
oh.
Yeah, I mean, I'm...
And
I'm,
you hated Poor Things.
And I hate... Yes, I did. But I, you know, people, I feel like, have been raving about her. I mean, I'm truly, truly torn. I'm really rooting for Lily Gladstone. I'm all in on Lily Gladstone. But I won't be surprised if it's Emma. That being said, didn't she just recently... And again, paraphrasing here, didn't she recently give a speech where she essentially called out Lily Gladstone and how great it almost reminded me of a speech last year between Michelle and Cate Blanchett, where I feel like Cate Blanchett was really almost pushing people towards Michelle Yeoh. Or am I completely off base?
I didn't hear the said speech. But
let me see if I could find it on Twitter.
I just think Emma Stone has won two recently. La La Land was not that long ago. Yeah.
Gold Derby has Emma Stone right now, number
oh,
one.
Oh, shit. And we know Gold Derby is to be trusted.
But I don't know odds as well as my. It seems close-ish.
How do y'all feel about the Leo snub? Sorry, I keep saying I only have one question left. I was listening to a podcast that infuriates me, but they were like, oh, Leo lost because he has been censoring Lily Gladstone and taking a step back. I'm like, I mean, he's still there. Like, people still see him. I don't think that's why he didn't get nominated, like, deferring to Lily Gladstone's nomination at all.
His performance was very deserving of a nomination. I thought he did fantastic, maybe even career best. But looking at this Best Actor lineup, like, this is maybe my favorite category of, like, nominees. I guess Bradley Cooper.
I mean, I think he's, I think, like, he was the next guy up, right? Like, he was.
I don't think he minds not being there. Basically, yeah. Like, I wouldn't have surprised me to see him there, but at the same time, he hasn't really been campaigning for it. But I don't think that's the reason why. Like, I don't think people went through their heads and were like, oh, he cares too much about Lily Gladstone. He hasn't really been out there, which is fine. It's his prerogative. He doesn't really want to. Coleman Domingo is like lighting up the red carpet. Jeffrey Wright. Like, this is a great list.
I guess in my mind, he has been out there because I'm thinking about when Killers originally came out and Lily couldn't do anything because the SAG was still striking when Killers came out, right? Mm-hmm. That seems crazy to me, but and Leo's a producer on the movie, so he could be out and doing things. So in my mind, he has been out, but I guess he has also been taking a step back. I don't know. Everything is so optics-based. Like, I really did not think Annette Bening had that much buzz going for her, but I guess, like, I was just not in that bubble of conversation, you know?
I mean, it's someone asked me the other day, like, did any of this, like, really surprise you? And I think if you've been paying attention, none of it's really that surprising. I think I, like, joked to you guys on, like, text that the Killers of the Flower Moon missing adapted screenplay was maybe my, like, most surprising, or like the Taste of Things not being nominated.
I think Taste of Things is the most, I mean, it's the hilarious one because France could have put up
Anatomy of Fall. So, like, those aren't like the sexy snubs that people want to talk about, but they're kind of the things that I think Oscar watchers were like, oh, I guess we're going with that. And it made me think that maybe they don't like Killers as much, or they were upset about the adaption because it really doesn't center the indigenous stories. It, you know, it centers the white stories on purpose, right? Because Scorsese is the one telling the story. So yeah, I mean, there are a lot of like factors, but just looking at these like faces, like they're all like familiar, but there's like what, 10 first time nominees, individuals, and so I choose to celebrate them, but
yeah, I mean, in terms of not, I think the not surprise aspect kind of goes with what Mike was saying about the muted award season, in the sense where it's just like, yeah, of course. Yeah, sure. They'll get nominated. Yeah. I see that coming. You know what I mean? In terms of, I really like the phrase sexy snub that you used. I think the sexiest snub out there is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Should have definitely gotten in there for it. And it was so fun. Definitely, it's on Paramount Plus. Give yourself a treat and go see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem.
I would vote Charles Melton just because objectively he is the sexiest person to be snubbed.
That's fair. And I can't argue against that, Bradley, because my movie is for children and I could get arrested.
I mean, I've heard a lot of people be like, oh, this is going to be so boring. Like, Oppenheimer's going to win everything. And Oscars exist to be, like, exciting? Like,
I wish, though, there was some way, and this is for Emmys, too, that we could, like, force the wealth to be spread. But I'm so happy for Everything Everywhere All at Once to sweep. Everyone was annoyed by it, but I'm like, if one movie is to sweep, let it be this one. But now let it be done. You know, like, it's more fun to see different things out there, and then you get to hear different scores when the walk-up music plays and they go to accept their award.
Oh, score maybe is the most annoying category.
I'm desperately trying to find the quote from this speech. I know it exists.
Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. John Williams should just like joke, like make a joke score and see if it gets nominated. Yeah, I mean, It's always tough. Like, there's always going to be stuff that you wish was on there that you want recognition for. So watch the Independent Spirit Awards.
Of which Jesse is a voter. So if you're
I am.
mad at what
Wow.
happens, don't tweet at Jesse. Just tweet at Chaos on the
Yeah.
Set.
It's the like you just have to like pay for a membership. It's not that great. I mean, it's cool, but you should do it. Yeah. Like $60. I should send you all the invites to like the cool screenings that I get invited to that I can't go
Oh,
to in LA,
yes.
surely.
I would love that.
I did see a stat that this was like the worst showing of British actors in like over a decade.
Are the
Stats like that
Brits
are
mad?
funny. I don't know. I find stats like that very funny. Maybe one day I'll see Zone of Interest and I can comment on
Okay. It's
it.
not
We've
as
done it.
profound. Yeah, it wasn't as profound of a speech as I thought it was. She was just like, she just like calls out Lily Gladstone and how great she was, but it seemed like she was shifting focus in that direction. Cut it out.
A lot can happen in a little over a month. We'll have maybe seen all the movies. They'll
Jesse,
maybe be available.
I do hope you get to see Zone of Interest as soon
Thank
as
you.
it is available and you are in a good enough headspace to see it.
Yeah, that's gonna hurt.
Both things need to be happening at the same time. But thank you for joining us. We always love you jumping on Chaos on the Set. Would you like to tell people where they can find more of you on the internet?
Oh yes, thank you so much for having me. I love talking with you both about this kind of stuff. It's a lot of fun. You can find me on the internet at Book Jessie is Better on Instagram. I mostly just talk about books. They have a lot of sex in them. Sorry, Mike.
Hey, I'm fine by me, just not Poor Things. That's where I draw the line.
And I am on Letterboxd and I'm where and I feel like I've been on for like a year, so I'm like finally getting the like quippiness. So
I think your letterbox is great. Wait, what's
thank
your letterbox?
you.
If
What
you want
is
to
it?
share.
Oh, I think it's Jess to kill, Jess underscore two underscore kill.
Mike, on the Poor Things front, this is the first Best Picture nominee to have the word poor in it. If you like weird stats like that.
Well, yeah, because it's a fucking poor film.
Mike, where can people find you?
You can find me on Letterboxd at mRicardi, and you can direct all of your hatred towards my Poor Things opinions to my review. Leave a comment. Thanks.
You can find me on Letterboxd at Shruti Marate. You can find me on Twitter at MicroMarate and on Instagram also at MicroMarate. And then you can follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. We are at Chaos on the Set on all three. And then you can also email us if you have any more in-depth Oscar thoughts or if you have any thoughts on Lost Season 4, which we will be covering very shortly. Mike just watched The Shape of Things to Come. Very, very exciting. Can't say any spoilers because Pri hasn't gotten there yet. And hopefully she's listening to this podcast. But anyway, email us at chaosonthesetpod@gmail.com.